goodness.
From the vocalist perspective, I mean, from the artist perspective, any trends or things that you've seen over the years?
Definitely. When, you know, when I first, I was an artist, and I was sort of the beginning of a new way kind of thing. It was mostly traditional country music. And of course now, country music is influenced, it always has been influenced by pop. But now it's, you know, you can just about come from any style. And if it's produced just right with certain instrumentation, it can become country. But not only that, Nashville now is multicultural. I hope you guys have been out there seeing how many different kinds of music that are in just the small clubs everywhere. It's just fantastic. You know, from crazy jazz and weird instrumentation like world music and rap and, of course, pop and R&B. Being from Memphis, my husband and I miss that real R&B from Memphis, but I think... I don't think it's in Memphis anymore anyway. But they do, they've just got about just about everything here. So that's just that. It also used to be really, the industry was so tied up with the major labels. If you couldn't get through that bottleneck, you know, it just really limited the people that could succeed and make money. Now, I really, you know, it's kind of bad news for the major labels, but it's real good news for the indie labels and for independent musicians that are willing to do the due diligence and the experimentation and the study that it will take to find your unique audience. There's no bottleneck anymore. You know, it's of course the internet's full of people trying to do that, but most people are not willing to go the distance and do the work. And be smart, and if you can't do it, delegate it. Get a team around you. So that's what I've seen change. As far as vocal ability, you know, I was thinking about this back when I was recording. We didn't have pitch fixing, you know, we didn't have the ability to do that. And so I had to sing too. But these days, your ear is so used to pitch fixing that almost everyone gets pitch fixed when it, and it's sad because it's kind of artificial. But I will tell you a secret. The better you can sing and the less they have to do that, the more emotionally compelling your vocal is. The machine cannot create that any more than the machine can really create real horns or, you know, strings, cello. Or, I mean, they can get really close, but there's nothing like the real thing. So if you learn to sing, make sure you have a pitch Nazi for a teacher that is going to make sure that you know, you really learn to be, you know, have that surgically accurate pitch. And then and just vocal control. So the ante is upped, not because there's a bottleneck, but because there are so many people trying to do this. And because of the machines that can fix people. So that's a cool little thing to know, is that you actually can actually step out of the crowd if you can make your voice better these days.
I have a comment and a question, Judy. With what you just said, if you're more on pitch and then you do less correcting, also from the point of view of the engineer and the reputation, it's like, hey, this person's requiring less time and effort on their part, so that works in your favor as well, correct? They don't have to correct
it. It does, unless they need money.
Oh. Yeah. Then they ask you to sing off too.
No, what I'm saying, and really what I'm saying is, you can save, you as an artist, can save yourself self-studio time. Because it costs, it's not only a headache for the engineer. If the engineer is really good, then they've got a lot of work in it. It really is just a headache. But if you want to, I mean, people make a living just fixing people's pitch.
Using auto-tune.
Yeah, people that are really good at auto-tune. So, you know, you want to give them as little work as you can.
Getting back to the food thing,
yeah.
Do do you recommend things like green smoothies and raw living food and getting as many preservatives out of your diet as possible?
Yes.
Can you speak to that?
Yes. And I'll tell you right now, I'm a nutritional hypocrite. Everybody that knows me really well knows that. But
we all
but I do. Some vocal teachers will say, don't you ever do this or don't you ever do that. What I'll tell you is there's some things that are the same for everyone, like water. Everyone needs water, plain water. Everyone needs protein. Everyone needs some kind of enzymes and raw food and stuff like that. But some people can't digest like salads. Some people can't digest beans. Some people can't digest. What you want to do is do your own research into what you're digesting. I have a nutritional alternative medical person who tests me, and then I know what I'm digesting or I'm not. And the bottom line is, if you eat stuff that junks you up, if you're not digesting it, or if it's just bad for you, you know, and milk and mucus forming foods are going to junk up your vocal cords.
If you eat
stuff that junks you up and it's hard to digest and stays in there, it causes you to be toxic. And then you're going to get colds, you're going to get mucus, you're going to get other things too. So, and your vocal cords and your larynx, it's part of your body. So the more healthy the rest of your body can be, the more healthy this is. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And just, you want to use common sense. Notice if you are having constant colds, if you're an allergy prone. There's a doctor in Cordova. One of my students goes to a doctor in Cordova, Tennessee, and he formulates special shots for her based on, he tests her and finds out what she's particularly sensitive to at the time, and her allergies are gone. I have other students that use acupuncture. So, you know, dig into it, because the truth is, if you sing, I mean, man, when my son was little and he'd have a cold, I would sleep in the door frame of his room, but I would not sleep in his room because I was a session singer, and I was there to make, in case he called out to me, I was there, but we're so freaked out at even the colds can cost you thousands of dollars if it comes on the wrong day, or cost you a contract. So, yeah, physical health is just immensely important, and physical exercise is really good for singers as well.
Anyone else?
Uh huh.
So I've got my vocal demo, and of course, as networking is important and everything, do you have any specific, like, proactive things I can do at this point besides just meeting people? You know, like, should I take it to publishing studios or anything? What should I do?
The best thing I think to do, and this goes for songwriters trying to get cuts too, the best thing is to really make friends and in the business, you know, and get to know them. Because if you just hand a CD of demo reel to someone, it's probably going to go five out of two.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
It really, so don't waste your time. Get to know people, and even if they did listen to it, there's lots of singers trying to, you know, get that kind of work. It's that friend networking kind of thing, which means you're going to have to spend time and, you know, go to things like this, you know, meet people and ask those questions like that. I'll tell you, even back when did I move to Nashville, 1980, I had been doing jingles at a jingle mill in Memphis that did 70-something percent of the world's jingles, and that is really demanding vocal work. Okay, I'd done that for about 6 or 7 years, and I moved to Nashville, and I'm going to tell you, it took me 2 years to get in. So don't be discouraged and get, you know, you might need to get a day job. I mean, almost most of the waiters that you'll meet in Nashville are songwriters and or singers or musicians. I mean, even my gynecologist wanted to pluck a song for me. So, you know, my chiropractor is a singer-songwriter. That's the only reason he's here. He was like head of the chiropractic thing in Texas, but he wanted to come to Nashville to be in the middle of the song society. So it's really cool. It's like a big family, and you, it's a good place to make friends. It is open. It's not real closed. You know, don't you find that, Eric?
Yeah.
And yeah, and you just, you know, spend time doing it. Yeah.
Do you recall like sort of a specific like person you met or group of people that sort of opened the first door that led to other doors?
Yes. I knew someone that had been in my town. So that's cool for you guys, knowing Eric and different people. I knew a girl that, in fact, a group of people that were from Memphis. And I'm not sure it helped me all that much, but it sort of made me feel, I got to meet a few people, at least, through her. But then what happened was, it became, I guess, I let it be known, and I did get my jingle reel around, my jingle and background reel around, and I did, you know, looked at a phone book and called the people that were at the studios up and came and met them and, you know, they had a meeting and stuff like that. But what happened was, and I know this happened in L.A. too, somebody was out of town or sick, and they needed a fill-in. And because they knew I'd been working in Memphis is what I did, they trusted me to fill in that spot. And little by little, I started subbing for all the big groups in Nashville. And then we started forming our own little groups, and I started working a little bit more regularly. But the thing that really saved me when I first came to Nashville and I wasn't plugged into those groups that were doing everything was songwriting, songwriters lead vocals on demos. Because their songwriters are always looking for singers to do demos and sound fresh. So there's not as much jingle work, there's not as much group work as there was when I came to Nashville. It has changed in that way. And a lot of artists are doing their own background vocals and stuff like that. But there's still that work. And you need to make friends with artists that are up-and-coming artists that are doing demos and don't have session singers that, you know, then they're more likely to use a friend if they know that they can do the work. Yeah, do the job.
Jenny, what about letting them know about, in that regard, the publishing company, get in touch with the publishing company?
Yeah. Get in touch with the publishing companies and just call them up. And they are always looking for a voice that is going to be able to get their songs pitched. So it may be even better to get to know the songwriters individually. But that's going to take, you know, you can hit a bunch of songwriters at once if you talk to the publishing head and just maybe ask them if they would mind, you know, handing your reel around. So go to industry functions that you're allowed to go to. Go to writers' nights a lot and get to know these people. You know, there's a real good organization I highly recommend you joining, and that's Nashville Music Pros. That's an online community. I think it's a very small fee now, like $2 or $3 or something like that a month. But so there's only serious people can be there. But they've got a lot of sort of private groups and stuff that you can get if you're in that website. And you just have to be doing business in a serious way, in a professional way, in Nashville to be able to join. So look into that, NashvilleMusicPros.com. And you can meet some of these people online in these places like that. And, you know, there's LinkedIn and all that as well. And those are valuable places.
Along those lines, with singers that are looking for demo work, do you have to be part of the union these days? I know back when.
Yeah. If you are doing high-end work in Nashville, yes. And after, you need to be. You should be a part of AFTRA because you're known as a professional when you do that. I'm a member of AFTRA. But it's a right to work state, And you don't legally have to, no. So that answers your question.
But would it help you get more work if you're actually a member?
To tell you the truth, it's important what kind of work you're looking for. And what I always tell people as far as the unions go, whether it's AFTRA or the Musicians Union, is let that be a goal. Don't join until it makes sense, because you're going to have to pay an initiation fee. And, I mean, the dues are not going to be bad, but the initiation fee is up there. But when you start getting enough work to warrant it, then by all means join the unions, because it is a collective that bumps up the scale, and you get residuals if you do certain things, if you do jingles or if you do backgrounds on a record that gets to be really hot, you know, and plays for a long time, you actually can get a residual effect on that. So there are good reasons. And if you get enough work through AFTRA, AFTRA and SAG are about to merge, Screen Actors Guild. And if you get enough work through them, of course, there's health insurance. So
SAG Farley's still in effect, right? You can do three union jobs and not join.
You don't legally have to join. It's a right to work.
You can be on the card and not be a member for three jobs. I think it's still the rule. So.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a limit. Yeah. But your they charge pension and welfare, and you will not get it.
I'm not going to get it.
Any other questions? Yeah.
I'm just curious, how is it when you hear, like, I heard a few years ago that Elton John had vocal nodules?
Nodules.
He actually came to Vanderbilt and had them removed surgically. How do you avoid that horrendous thing?
Good question. That's the other thing. You want to learn to sing and speak with controlled air pressure. If you do that, you'll never get them.
What causes
them? Abuse, vocal abuse. Too much air pressure going through the vocal cords. Think of a heart valve.
Okay.
Think of a heart valve. Okay, when the blood pressure gets too high, it can blow, right? It can blow it. Okay, 20 minutes of screaming. 20 minutes of screaming in a football game can give you the beginnings of nodes, which are like little blood blisters on the edge of your cords. 20 minutes. And yes, it can go away really fast if you go on voice rest. And I've worked with lots of people that have had been diagnosed with them. And if, you know, when I can help the people, I've got one person that had nodes and really, I'm not sure she didn't still have them when she came to me, because she was having a lot of vocal strain, and we backed her. Helped her back off. You know, vocal teaching is a team, but she was able to back off and still have that powerful voice that you need, but back off the air pressure. There's, you know, you really need to get your breath support and breath control balanced, so much that she's one of the people on the voice on TV now. So, Adley Stone.
Is it a lot of people that are singing without diaphragmatic support?
That's a problematic phrase for me. I'll tell you why. The diaphragm, if you know a little bit about it, is connected to the bottom of your rib cage all the way around. When you think about diaphragmatic singing, that's where you're going to focus. When you focus right there, you're going to come in on it. You're just going to invariably be coming from there. And when your rib cage collapses and crunches in any way, right there, then the diaphragm has too much play, meaning it can give you too much air, it can push too much air. Like a badly strung drum head or trampoline. Instead of... So what you need to do is sing, you know, the phrase, sing your butt off? That's what you need to do. You need to sing from your butt, not from your chest. And when you say diaphragmatic singing, when people say that every time people think that way, that's where they come from. And yes, the diaphragm is what's working it. But if you need to put your focus on your derriere, not your rib cage, so that you're squeezing your butt for power, or your legs or feet, which are butt extensions. Okay?
Yeah. So in the case of someone like, I just mentioned one of the gentlemen, I heard it on the news. So he was, of course, with a schedule like that, he's singing correctly for so many nights, for so many seasons, right?
You don't have to. I'll tell you. If you sing properly, and my students can tell you this too, they've been on the road. If you sing properly, the next night that you sing, you'll feel vocally better than you did the first night. Unless you let yourself get physically exhausted. If you get physically exhausted, then you don't support your voice. This takes energy to do. It's much easier to do that and push. And when you get physically tired, you stop doing what's necessary to hold back that pressure. And that's when these singers run into trouble. Yeah. So they need to use wisdom. Yeah.
It comes back to the whole being physically fit.
Yes. Absolutely. Being physically fit, staying getting enough straight, rest.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing good. Yeah. All right, who wants to sing?